Okay, hello and welcome to Q&A Cosmos episode 435. I'm your host, the remnant of Mike Apps, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
From the ashes, David McBurney, fan one master.
Synergy.
Taste testing new and unusual and possibly cruel soda flavors in Japan. Michael Baker, Gaiji Monogatari.
Nope.
Sure, that one. Yes, exactly.
Listen, I want to be clear. No one made you drink this. You made that choice yourself.
Yes, but I mean, whenever there's a new and interesting one, I just have to at least try it. I don't always finish it. Some of the more interesting Pepsi flavors over the years did not get finished. I think only one of them I ever tried twice.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer, who was stuffing his face with Girl Scout cookies and couldn't speak until now.
There are worse fates.
And tag-alongs are the best.
No, you will not post that slander on our show. It's Adventurefuls. Adventurefuls.
And again, my vote goes for any Girl Scout cookie that cannot melt in transit.
I don't think that's any of them.
Are you a fan of... Perhaps you would like Do-Si-Dos.
Which one is the Do-Si-Dos?
I'm pretty sure those are like the white cookies with the peanut butter in the middle.
Oh yeah, those are good.
Yeah, so we're a cookie podcast now.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Send us free cookies.
Ask us questions about cookies.
We will receive free cookies to evaluate on a weekly basis.
Yeah, the shortbread and the Do-Si-Dos, those are the safest ones to send me.
Caramel. Chocolate.
The Thin Mints are appreciated, but again, they tend to arrive as a solid brick in the past.
So what you're saying is the Girl Scouts need to expand to Japan. That's what I'm taking out of this.
How would you say Girl Scout in Japanese?
Did we lose Gaijin?
Gaijin has died of dysentery.
We're off to a smashing start.
What would you like on your tombstone?
Loving husband and father, even though I don't have children or a wife.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rest for the grave you want, not the grave you've got.
Exactly. Hey, that's good advice.
Okay, yeah. Gaijin says his computer just crashed.
So okay.
Hopefully he will be back soon. But, yes, that is why I intend when I am dying to rent a tuxedo and be buried in it.
Nice.
Yeah, try and take it back from a dead man.
Yeah.
See how that goes for you.
You want your rental back?
My goal is to live my life in
such a way. I assured you, when I died, I did shit.
You hear what I said? I said, my goal is to live my life in such a way that people don't celebrate when I'm gone.
Listen, I fully expect that when I die, somehow Wheels will still be alive, and he'll say, oh, that's a shame, and then we will move on to the next episode.
Jesus Christ.
Well, I think that's what you'd want. Do you want us to stop the show when you're gone?
Hello, and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 2000, The Funeral for Fanboy Master.
Died as he lived, making statements that didn't really mean anything.
And we can't play video games anymore because of the arthritis.
I think that will be a lucky reason to not be able to play video games anymore.
Yeah.
Be worth one to my
no team. Kidding.
By the time we hit episode 2000, which at current going rates would be about 40 years from now.
Oh, Jesus.
We've already gone just wildly off the rails. Hey, Fire Miner. Sorry we missed you last time. In the secret episode.
Secret. So secret I haven't actually posted it yet because I don't have a good reason.
Hey, you got him back.
Okay, it's been a while since that last happened.
Let's hope it's not a sign of things to come.
It's a sign that I am staying away from any other tab on this web browser for a while, just to make sure that I don't hit any GIFs or anything that decide to mess things up again.
Oh, so you're one of those people that says GIF.
No, guys,
excuse
no!
Excuse me, we had this small war over 5 years ago. I've been trying to avoid saying that word ever since, but yeah, so what? Okay.
We've been having this small war every 2 weeks for the last 1,000 years.
I just want to say, choosy moms choose GIF.
Yeah. Anyway, no, we are not getting into this argument again. I am not saying this word again for a while. Okay.
I pronounce it however I think the other person would pronounce it, just to avoid conflict.
I'd say GIF and get confrontational, as has been already demonstrated.
Yes.
I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, GIF is a golden feathered avian alien from a science fiction series published about 40 years ago. That's how I remember it.
I won't accept
so, yeah. Anyway, so we have questions today.
Yeah, like last week we were all sizzling no steaks, so we should probably start with some questions.
Question is, do we want to start with some of these questions?
Does anyone have the list up? Because I am in imminent peril and being mauled by an army of moles or something.
Okay, I did. Okay, let me determine how many of these I will actually look at. Okay, this is a safe one for now. Okay. Guy Winquote, that's a guy on YouTube and various social media, does a lot of stuff on, like, fighting games, made an astute observation that Street Fighter characters are like archetypes that only receive characterization through either spin-off comics and anime or through SF6's World Tour mode. Austin Gay has always made a conscious effort to show how the King of Fighters characters live like normal people and doing their thing. Well, I wouldn't say they live like normal people, but they do have lives.
They have some semblance of a life that is not involving punching people in the face.
Or if they don't, it's a problem. Like how Kyo Kusanagi has a recurring joke that he is desperately hoping that he will one day graduate high school. but yeah, we can
normal is relative.
Past. And you've got become a pass because a lot of fighting game devs just don't think much about characterization. Just look at Virtua Fighter. Oh, buddy, I have many thoughts about Virtua Fighter's truly deranged characterization that we are only dimly aware of, having only had access to the games. one of them involves the word Satan Shark.
What?
But yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay.
But isn't it weird?
Okay.
But isn't it weird that Resident Evil, their one franchise set in a world similar to ours, also doesn't give a lot of crumbs about how its characters live or how the world works outside of the bioorganic weapon thing? I don't think it's that weird because, like, every Resident Evil game takes place over the course of, like, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very compressed windows of viewing for the rest of the world, and honestly, not a good time to be looking at the rest of the world.
Yeah, Resident Evil is fascinating because the implications of its world are actually weird for zombie fiction, because in Resident Evil world, all viruses get contained. Like Resident Evil world has suffered through 10 zombie outbreaks and never a zombie apocalypse. And that's a wild thing in zombie media. There's nothing like it.
I never thought of it that way. Goddamn thing.
Not even the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah, the Resident Evil movies immediately descend into zombie apocalypse. Resident Evil game canon, like, and you can tell that for a minute, they weren't quite sure if that's what they wanted to do, because, like, the first handful of games all take place within, like, a 9-month span, and it's not clear what the world looks like past the Raccoon City outbreak, because, like, the second you get to Code Veronica, it's like, oh, well, you're on an island, and God only knows what's going on outside it. Like, email still works, that's the most you can say. But yeah, like eventually with Resident Evil 4, they like ultimately decide to piss or get off the pot and just say, Yeah, so Umbrella went out of business because making a bunch of zombies did not make them a lot of money. And they got sued into like Resident Evil 9 explicates, they got slowly and torturously sued out of existence, which is an incredibly funny and weirdly realistic thing to happen.
I was going to say, this is possibly the most realistic take on a zombie apocalypse I've ever seen. For a given definition of realistic, when you're talking about something as ridiculously contagious and virulent as the T-virus.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think that Resident Evil needs to be understood as having congealed the story rather than having had it written. But I think that it does make sense that we don't know that much about what Leon's doing outside of, like, blowing up entire, like, cities worth of zombies. Because, again, the longest time span that a Resident Evil game has ever taken place over is, like, a day and a half. And so... While it is a little weird that we don't, like, but, like, you know, what would a game be about that was set between zombie outbreaks? It wouldn't be a Resident Evil game as we understand it.
Yeah. Well, I want to say that what I liked about 9 is that early in the game, you do get to see a city functioning before
one city an outbreak. Before its outbreak.
Yeah, and it's... You get 10 minutes of a functional city before, you know, Victor Gideon starts shooting people with darts. But then also the thing that always creeped me out the most, and it resurfaces in 9, is the product catalog. Like, they were absolutely making products that you could purchase, you know?
Organic weapons.
Yeah.
Designer made. But one thing I will say that's fascinating, that like the existence of Renfield is interesting, but it's also way more insane because it's right next to the bombed out husk of Raccoon City that has not been touched in 20 years. Which is fascinating, like truly a like mind bending design decision that I adore with all of my heart.
And I'm I don't know how I made this happen, but I saw Tofu. I saw him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. You get it through some combination of, like, doing the little thing in Wesker's desk and examining the beret.
Oh. I thought that was Jill's beret. It's Tofu's beret?
Who's to say? It could be both.
Wow. Do you think they'll add a Tofu mode in a future update? Please.
I mean,
Chaos says so when not in game, Leon is Chris posting.
That's quite possible. It is funny to me that like Leon and Chris apparently just sort of keep in contact as stated in the ending of RE9. But what was I gonna say? Resident Evil 9. We know that they have a new mini game coming in May or June. We might see Tofu in that.
Okay.
I still appreciate that, like, Tofu just always speaks in Kansai dialect.
Yeah, he yelled at me when I tried to shoot him.
It's his like negative sound that he can make in the Tofu Survivor. It's one of the designers from the original RE2 slightly pitched around. But, yeah, very funny, very silly. I'm glad for those tragically unaware Tofu as like a minigame character in Resident Evil comes from Resident Evil 2. You finish the fourth survivor well enough, you get the Tofu Survivor. And Tofu himself came from, he was originally a Hest hitbox that like designers decided, well, he looks like a giant block of tofu. And this is why it's important that we have the joy and ingenuity of like developer level of developer assets that don't look like shit, because we get funny things like that from it. Tofu could not have lived in a world where AI existed. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, that's one of the things trending on Blue Sky right now, is just people showing off their interesting choices of placeholder art for various projects.
Yeah.
Quite hilarious at times. And also various mistakes have been made over the years by actual professional companies forgetting to take stuff out, like a floor texture that says property of BioShock, don't use.
No, it's specific, it's specifically, don't use me, I'm from BioShock.
Yes. Or, I don't think anyone's brought up the fact that Kirby from Kirby's Dream Land was originally a placeholder.
Yeah, Kirby was a placeholder asset.
But they just couldn't find, they couldn't come up with a anything better, and they just it just grew on him.
Yeah, they got attached to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Tofu Survivor remains one of the funniest, like, silly things, and I appreciate that. We might not know what Tofu does, although he somehow has survived in the husk of Raccoon City for nearly 30 years. Don't worry about it.
I mean, he's a solid wobbly block of bean curd. There is nothing to infect.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have other needs that need to be taken care of.
Oh no, if he gets bit in 2 remake, chunks of his body disappear. Like, the zombies will eat him if they can.
Somehow they want brains and they want tofu.
But he doesn't
turn into zombie with anything. Yeah, there is no zombie tofu. This is true. The Resident Evil 2 remake took the especially absurd step of producing 4 other tofu survivors.
Yes.
I forget.
One of them has, like, a flamethrower. Yeah.
Yeah. they were like different other preparations of tofu.
So that one has to be Age tofu then.
Right. Let's see. We've got, so there was tofu, there was cognac.
Yep.
There was Uido mochi, there's flan, and there's anin tofu.
Okay, so those are technically, none of those are actually tofu as bean curd.
Yeah, I gotcha.
They're similarly wobbly things.
Yeah, wobbly dishes.
Yeah. So I barely cleared the hunk scenario and got tofu, and he just has a whole inventory full of knives. And then, but here's the thing, I never beat his scenario, but at one point I paid the $2 to get the thing that just unlocks all the DLC, and I did try those other tofu modes and couldn't beat those either. I don't know. It's not meant to be easy.
for those unaware, tofu in the remake has 16 combat knives. And this is in reference to the fact that if you played the Tofu Survivor in original RE2, he just had a knife. But those were unbreakable back then, so now you get 16. Cognac gets a flamethrower, and what is this other thing? I forget what the GM79 is. It's a grenade launcher. He gets a flamethrower and grenade launcher. He's actually much more equipped.
Yeah.
He has like a bazillion, like a bunch of flamethrower ammo and a bunch of 40 flame grenades? Jesus. Okay, yeah, Cognac is going to survive, no matter, one way or the other.
Hey, is that, like, literally enough grenades for every major enemy in the game?
It might be.
Well, it's a tough scenario. There's a lot of zombies.
It's true, it's true. Uido Mochi gets 36 hand grenades.
Jeez.
Flan gets a minigun. The spark shot, an anti-take rocket, tank rocket, 2 flash grenades, and a bunch of needle cartridges. I can't remember what that's ammunition for. It's for the spark shot. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like less ridiculous than some of these other ones, but still pretty nuts. And anin tofu. Anin tofu gets
spelled with a T, not a D. Okay.
It's likely been localized because we wouldn't do that in English. But yeah. In Japanese it would probably be anin tofu.
It is anin tofu.
But yeah. And then the anin tofu gets the alternate handgun and 360 shots. Good lord. So yeah, like all of them have extraordinarily weird loadouts, and I believe the victory screen for all of them is like, yeah, it's Hunk eating Uido Mochi.
Wow.
Poor Uido Mochi. He, survive or not, he will not survive. Yeah, untangle that sentence. Okay, I'm done Resident Evil posting.
Yes. Okay, let's next question.
this one that Fireminer just posted. Just how immersive are the two Romania games? I've only ever heard Dreamcast fans talking about Sega Gaga and Rent a Hero. Immersive is not really how I describe them. They're interesting. For those unaware, Romania is like a game where you're sort of trying to like get a guy's life on track by sort of fucking with him. By like doing things like you read his diary to get an idea of like what he actually wants and isn't able to pursue, and then you like draw attention to things in the house, in his little apartment, and sort of try to push him into like actually doing things with his life instead of being a neat. And I like immersive's not really what I would describe them, but they're unusual. I'm not even convinced, like, my knowledge of these is relatively surface level. I'm not convinced they're two different games. I think they might just be, they might be, like, a Dreamcast game and it's PS2 port, but, because I've just never seen any indication that they're functionally different games. Proper title would be like Romania 203. But let's see if I can figure this out. Yeah, as far as I've never been aware of a second Romania. It was a Dreamcast game that was ported to the PS2 later, to my knowledge. And of course, correct me if I'm wrong. But it's an interesting little game because, yeah, like I said, it's like a weird sort of like. You know, you're basically like an invisible little influence on this guy to make him like pursue something with his life. And it's neat. Immersive is not really the word I would use, but it's neat.
Yeah. All of the various, references I'm finding right now just say it was released on Dreamcast and then on PlayStation 2.
Yeah. This isn't like Seaman, where there's actually like an obscure PS2 only sequel. I think there's just the one Romania. But yeah, it is a neat game though. I hope that one day there would be interest in bringing it over, but I'm not sure if it even has inbuilt support for subtitles, and basically all of its dialogue is delivered via voice. So, it would be an undertaking if my understanding is correct. But yeah, a really unique game, the kind of thing that Sega like was able to create because they just would spend money on anything. And like, I'm glad that there was that period, but I fully understand why that kind of thinking nearly killed the company. Yeah. But it's a really neat game that I would hope someday finds a way to be released in languages other than Japanese. It's unique. This next one is Fireminer. This isn't a question, but I'll just bring it up because Fireminer's saying that they've been playing a Toho game called Toho Artificial Dream in Arcadia, and that it's a pretty good Megami Tensei game, and recommend we check it out. I have a bunch of Megami Tensei games I need to finish before I'll think about that, but I will put it on the list.
Yeah, if I ever get through the actual Shin Megami Tensei games, then I'll start looking at clones.
Yeah, let's see if we can.
Right now in my backlog, I've got SMT5 Vengeance and Soul Hackers 2, and still never finished Metaphor. I got to get back into that one. Yeah.
That's not technically an SMT game.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you know what I mean though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a good game. It's just I got to be in the right mood for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very turned off by the part where you're inside a monster's intestines and
you're gonna get a lot of that.
and you get friggin' digested if you don't get out fast enough. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Megadeth.
What was that game called that he mentioned?
Tuhu, Artificial Dream in Arcadia. Toho.
Okay. Yeah, Tuhu, Artificial Dream in Arcadia.
Cool.
Okay, there's another one that I think has some interesting meat on it. I'm starting to think that Capcom's obsession with making a multiplayer shooter RE isn't just about profit. They think they can make RE the catch-all franchise for action games, like how Sega thinks Shining is the catch-all for fantasy games. It's a shame that the Bionic Commando reboot flopped because its core premise sounds like something that could fit in a lot of different settings. I'm not even convinced that it's per se the desire to make it a catch-all, at least from a development standpoint. We have reason to believe that in its very earliest prototypes, which I would suspect this is why this question came up. We have reason to believe that in its very earliest prototypes, Resident Evil 9 had multiplayer elements. But even beyond that, like Resident Evil 2 Remake, their earliest prototypes threw a lot of things at the wall, including there was a period where it was where they prototyped the idea of, well, what if it's a co-op game where one player is Leon, one player is Claire. This was at the same time that they were prototyping things as disparate as, like, well, what if it's first person or what if it's fixed camera? Like, they had a lot of ideas for what RE2 Remake might be, and RE9 as well. At this point, I think that there is a feeling that, like, I mean, like it or not, Resident Evil 5 sold nearly 10 million copies and was a co-op shooter. So there is an audience for whom that is a like important element of the series identity. And they want to, there's at least some part of the development staff that feels that it's of worth to service the fandom that built. Like, that's one of those things that can happen with a franchise that like changes identities from and splits into multiple, like, sort of before and after game. Yeah, before and after game types, like, is that you run into this situation of, like, well, if we're making a sequel to this, who are we trying to serve? And that can have very different, disparate answers that can be pretty interesting, actually. Like, because you'll get some of these where it's like, well, it's never going to be that again. Like, I think it's reasonable to assume that even though they're remaking the first three God of Wars, they will probably comport them to play more like the recent ones. I would be surprised if we find out that they are making ones that play like the old ones. Whereas Aonuma has made it clear that he doesn't think Zelda will ever be like it was prior to Breath of the Wild again. And I'm not convinced of that. I think that there might at some point be at least a throwback sub-series of Zelda games.
Well, they've already had the Link's Awakening remake and the actual Zelda game.
Yeah,
although Echoes of Wisdom is still pretty different from how those worked.
But I was going to say, though, that game already appears to be doing a more traditional format. But I'd like to see what they come up with next. Like, I mean, so if the next Zelda game is a continuation of Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, I'd be happy with that. If they went back to the old format, I'd be happy with that. But what I'd really like to see is if they can just do something completely different again. So we'll see. It's exciting, you know, to think about.
But we do see
Ruby Land 2.
Oh, God. But we do see some interesting, like, push-pull tension that comes from that. And, like, the multiplayer fans, I think, what I suspect that they will probably end up doing is primarily confining multiplayer, like, co-op Resident Evil 2 spin-offs and side games for the time being. They've experimented with that a bit. There's the Resident Evil Resistance mode that was packed in with Resident Evil 3 Remake that was initially essentially an unrelated project. that ultimately was packed into RE3 Remake to give that product more value.
Yeah, and ultimately they started selling 3 by itself, I think, for $30, or maybe that's just the sale price at this point.
That's just the sale price. Like three will always.
I tried that mode and it was awful. And then I never tried the one that came with 8. What was that called? Versus?
Reverse is probably what you're thinking of. Resistance is an interesting one. That its biggest problem is ultimately just that it has kind of shitty netcode and that it's not. That it's more like a proof of concept than a. Like, you can see why they would not be willing to try to sell it by itself.
Okay.
But it's an interesting idea because it's just like. It's a asymmetrical multiplayer mode where three or four players are playing like a cooperative Resident Evil shooter, and one player is playing is Wheels still here?
I'm here.
Stream just died.
What?
Yeah, the stream just died for me, so I was worried.
Looks like to me. Maybe it's just on your end.
Yeah, that must have just been on me. But it was an interesting idea because it was like four players playing a co-op Resident Evil shooter and one player like determining how to put enemies down and
like a dungeon master
like they functioned as a dungeon master. That
my
tried
first
to,
I was like something like Dead by Daylight might actually fit really well here,
kind of. But yeah, Resistance was, I think, the direction that we might see Resistance and we might see those go in and additional spin-off games, just to like, because I think that there is within Capcom a desire to, you know, there are definitely people who Resident Evil is 5 and to a lesser extent 6, and for whom there is a desire to make that happen, but they've also been very careful to like establish what like Resident Evil is for now, like as a single player experience. So I think that they are more likely to cordon that off into side projects rather than make that the main game for the time being, especially given that Resident Evil 9 did the numbers that it did.
Oh, what were the numbers so far?
Oh, the numbers that we got were that it became the best-selling game of the year as of like when we last got numbers, which is to say that it managed to do that. The last time the numbers we most recently got are through the end of February. It came out on the last day of February.
Okay.
Damn.
Like it did like 5 million copies very, very fast.
Wow.
So like RE9 has done well enough that I think that they will probably feel reasonably confident that they should probably continue staying the course. We have there's a number of games that they can sit down and try to remake, some of them more complicated than others. The one game that I could see in the pipeline, I think I mentioned this in the past, so I won't go into it too much, but the one game I could see them in the pipeline doing as a co-op game would be a Resident Evil Zero remake.
Yeah, I think we talked about that.
That might make some sense. Yeah, we talked about that, so I won't go into it too deep, but I think that, like, conceptually, that might make sense. But we shall see.
Wouldn't mind, like, because they've already said they're going to do another one remake, right?
No, there is a rumor that they are going to do another one.
Okay, but I was thinking if that was done in the format of Requiem, where you switch between Chris and Jill at different points, and the two scenarios are more intertwined, yeah, that'd be fun.
That's an interesting idea. A part of me desperately wants it to still be no Resident Evil game that comports with Resident Evil canon, Resident Evil 1 that comports with Resident Evil canon, but we shall see.
Yeah.
Let's see. Fireminer saying, so Arc System Works recently put out a trailer for a run-and-gun RPG called Damon and Baby. That's the phrase run-and-gun RPG is throwing me.
Nope.
What's interesting is that they revealed a character from that game that's the protagonist of Blazblue, just one day showed up in Daemon's setting, which made that game kind of a sequel to BlazBlue. BlazBlue fans just don't like it. They've settled with the fact that Arxis won't make another BlazBlue fighting game since the guy responsible has left the company. But they just don't like a run-and-gun RPG that looks nothing like BlazBlue. Has this ever happened before? I'm struggling to think of an exact thing.
Well, I want to say King of Fighters had some really weird spinoffs, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but those are, like, this... I think that there's two things that need to be happening here. It needs to be frameable as a continuation, but it also needs to be clear that there's never going to be a normal version of it again. And that's what this stands for to BlazBlue fans, is that, like, this feels like it is a... specifically not like you're never going to see a new BlazBlue because the guy who was its shepherd at Arc System Works has disappeared, left the company long since. So there's no hope for a new proper BlazBlue game as of now, but at the same time they're still just putting the dude from it in other things.
And you mean Ragna?
Ragna the Blood Edge, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think that's to meet the criteria here. I think we kind of have to think of something that's both of those, like a character that like a something that's connected to a franchise that doesn't have any chance of coming back. I remember like there was a period like this didn't end up being the case when the game finally released, but there's a period where the Bureau XCOM Declassified was this. Because
I remember that game.
Yeah.
Was it any good?
I think it's like kind of okay, but not great.
Okay.
But the Bureau XCOM Declassified was like, I think honestly, if it had been announced alongside the XCOM reboot, I think people might have been willing to try it. But, you know, obviously that didn't end up happening, and so its entire reputation was tainted. Essentially from the off. But honestly, I think it was kind of an interesting idea. But yeah, like that was almost this like, okay, we're making a new XCOM. What'll it be? It is a first. It is a third person shooter. but yeah, obviously people were not huge on that. Like, similarly, like, Metroid Prime Federation Force wasn't this, but was thought of by a lot of fans as this. Like, they were very upset that there was not a proper Metroid game at the time.
Yeah. Myself included.
And then, like, you know, a few years later, there was a proper Metroid game. But yeah, like, this kind of thing does happen. It's just relatively rare. And, like, you know, never say never. I mean, like, Arxis owns BlazBlue Lock, Stock, and Barrel, and it definitely has a lot of fans. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, one day people are treating Daemon X Baby like this, where it's like, well, now we can go back to it because eventually Arxis made another one. But, you know, we shall see. I swear I had something else I could think of that was kind of this, where, like, they didn't per se announce like they spent a long enough time with only this like weird pseudo connection as the only like existing version running around, but I'm spacing on what I like. I had it in my head while I was going on that stupid ass rant, and then this happened. But yeah, but this of course does happen because like companies love digging out old IP that to slap onto to reference or slap onto like a new project to make it have a bit more name value.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Chaos is just saying Dino Crisis Remake. I think ultimately, I'm sure that's been floated within Capcom like five times, and I think the thing that ultimately keeps keeping them from doing it is that they would have to have very different animation pipelines to make convincing dinosaurs. But let's see. Isn't there a rumor that RE0 will get a remake? There is. That's why I'm saying, like, I think if there's something on the horizon that ends up as co-op, I would not be surprised if it ends up being the Resident Evil 0 remake. But yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else like this. The thing that was mentioned, but it's not immediately coming to mind. I do not have this, like, I'm looking at the Discord questions. I do not have the personal strength to touch the Street Fighter questions right now. Maybe next week.
Yeah, Alex just came out, huh?
Yeah, no, I don't have the strength to touch the canon discussions there and the cousin discussions there. So we will save that.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that entire thing is just a messed up situation.
Yeah, so we're not going to touch that right now. Maybe next week. Okay. Let's hit one of these ones that's relatively quick, because I don't think anyone but me has opinions about this here. What can we expect from Shenmue 3 Enhanced? And do you think that a life simulator like Shenmue, much less Yakuza, way out of the capability of indie devs? I think at the fidelity of Shenmue, yes. If you're like insisting that you're making a three-dimensional game of this type, then yeah, an indie dev probably does not have the capacity to do such a thing. But if you're just talking about like a game with where every character runs on a schedule and that you can sort of live a life in, I think indie devs kinda do that a lot. But it really depends. As for Shenmue 3 Enhanced, I suspect that you will get Shenmue 3 plus some slightly nicer graphics plus the option to fucking turn off the stamina system that basically everyone hated. What you will not get is, honestly, again, the thing that people kind of thought that they were buying when they put money behind Shenmue 3, because you will not get a version of that that ends with the story being concluded. It throws me every time, and I will mention it in brief, but fully, Yu Suzuki thought that people putting money behind Shenmue 3 meant people want more Shenmue, and a lot of the people who put money behind Shenmue 3 thought, oh, finally, the end of the story. And those were two very different ideas. But yeah,
hold on. I have opinions on Shenmue.
Do you as the noted Dreamcast hater?
I do.
I hate Dreamcast too.
What? This is boring.
This is boring.
But yeah, like I do think that there's room to make like slow paced simulatory games, especially in the indie space, but to make them at the fidelity of Shenmue is just not really happening, because Shenmue's differentiating factor is like just raw asset creation. It's time, it's money. But you can make things that are, you know, lower fidelity assets or different perspectives that allow you to create worlds with a greater degree of rapidity and produce something like that. I'm gonna throw this one to the peanut gallery because I do not feel even remotely qualified to answer it. What can we expect from the next Neptunia? Some Neptunia fans prefer the spinoffs more than the mainline ones, you know? Is Wheels even still here? I think he might be the only one who has played more than one Neptunia game in this call.
Yeah. What about Neptunia? Read that one again, please.
It was like, what can we expect from the next Neptunia?
We can expect Eki fan service. I don't understand the question.
the word you're searching for is Echi, but yes.
Okay. Etchy. Gotcha.
Wheels.
Yes.
Wheels, are you here?
I'm here.
Might be the only person here who has played more than one Neptunia.
Okay.
And this is a Neptunia question.
Okay.
What can we expect from the next Neptunia?
Lots of fan service. Lots of stupid
number two
dad level type jokes about the video game industry.
Mm-hmm.
And new characters of some variety. And yeah, that's about it. Possibly good gameplay. But that's not guaranteed. And it'll probably run like shit. There you go. That is all you need to know.
So we're gonna hit one that's kind of depressing. Okay. Have you heard the news about the recent update to Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3 remastered? Not only broke the game, but also added a bunch of AI-generated costumes. Fire is listed as the developer who made the remaster, as well as a bunch of Star Wars and Legacy of Kain remasters, but they are, in fact, only the publisher. The actual remaster is done by someone else. Tomb Raider remaster was originally made by Saber Interactive, but the recent terrible update was done by Magic Media. How did it lead to Aspyr making the idiotic decision to change developer? I have no idea. My guess would just be Saber Interactive is a studio that's heavily in demand, and that they, like, for continued support, like, it was on Aspyr to find someone to keep doing continued support.
I would say it's probably more than that. Aspyr is still under the umbrella of one of the spin-offs from Embracer, and Saber Interactive has now gone off on its own. So they may not have a working relationship anymore.
Yeah, I don't know when they split. I would suspect that, like, Saber, whether they split before or after, Saber's contract essentially only required them to only obligated them to the end of the game, like, successful delivery. It's not even that unusual for post-launch support to end up being put to either, like, you know, if it's an internally developed title, you put it on a smaller team within the same company. If it's a externally developed title, maybe you just farm it out to another studio entirely.
It's surprising to me that Aspyr wasn't who did the support, though, because they did all the Mac ports. They have, I'm sure they still have people there that have had their hands in that code.
It doesn't surprise me that much, just by dint of, like, the sheer amount of titles that they have been putting out. There just isn't enough people for them to have Yeah, like, eventually it seems like they've sort of had to spin out to being more of a management-focused studio rather than a development-focused one, just by dint of the amount of contracts they've been undertaking. I would suspect that this was not, like, this was definitely not anything more than, well, Saber is expensive and, like, in demand. Like, you will see Saber's name as, like, some kind of development for support all over like the space at this point. And I would suspect that that is why you are seeing so many of those. I will say that when Aspyr contracted to Magic Media or whoever, they had best make sure to in future have an ironclad contract that says, don't try to just generate assets. No generated assets in the final game. Unclear whose idea that was or where it came from.
Yeah. That new Crimson Desert game, I think, is the latest one have AI art that pissed people off.
Well, placeholder, big ol' air quotes, like... It's hard to, like, when so many companies give the same excuse, like, yeah, maybe it's placeholder, or maybe you just use that as an excuse when people pointed out that you'd done it. Hard to say at this stage.
Yeah. But the fact that they can tell says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe if I had more respect for the illustrious developers of Black Desert Online, Perhaps I would be more willing to play.
Yeah, who is this developer even?
So Black Desert Online is a particularly abusively monetized Korean MMORPG.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. I barely played it, and it was unoptimized garbage as far as I'm concerned. Could not get that to run good on my computer under any circumstances.
Yeah, the developers, Pearl Abyss, and yeah, they've been... Like I said, a MMO that is at this stage mostly notable for the abusiveness of its monetization practices, but
if that's relative to the rest of the Korean industry, then that's pretty awful.
Yeah. Crimson Desert was one of those like slow motion, like, oh, the second that people can actually play this, they're going to be so pissed at it. because this is just me commenting on the last few months. It was weird when it suddenly became like a thing that a bunch of people were talking about. It's like, that, look at how big it is. It might be game of the year. And it's like, what are you doing it? What is the hook of this video game? And to this day, I'm still not sure what it was supposed to be. The scope is... I think all of us are at the point in our lives where scope for its own sake is no longer interesting or impressive. Everything I've seen of it looks... fucking wretched.
Hold on, I have opinions again.
Okay.
Which one it's going to be?
Well, when I saw video of it, this was my reaction.
You know what? He just left.
No, I think this is boring again.
I didn't want to reuse it, but yes, this is totally accurate.
What? This
is. You're really abusing the Scott Pilgrim thing.
We really need to stop.
We have limited space for them unless we pay Discord, and I'm not paying them. So
I tried to boost the server multiple times, I'll have you know.
Okay. God fucking damn you, I hate you so much. Let me finish a fucking statement. Jesus. Okay. Okay, fuck it. Okay, I'm jumping to some other interesting-looking questions here. We will get to the other ones.
Let's get the fuck away from Black Desert. Who cares?
Okay.
Trash.
He never even asked about Crimson Desert. I just knew we were eventually going to talk about it, so we took a brief sidebar on that. Okay. If you think about it, Konami was never good at either fighting games or RPGs. They had some weird and unwieldy fighting games like Dragon Might and... can't say Sacred Fist, but does anyone remember the roguelike Azure Dreams and Dao's Adventure? Yeah, I sure fucking do.
Yep.
Azure Dreams also, for some reason, got ported to the Game Boy Color later.
How'd that turn out?
I mean, like, it was more acceptable as a Game Boy Color game than it was a PlayStation game. But yeah, like, Dao's Adventure, I recall, just because it was like, oh god, like, the first year of the PSP and DS in terms of RPGs are just fucking miserable. And so I would just sort of keep track of both of them. Like, both systems eventually had, like, enormous libraries of excellent RPGs, but the first year for both, awful. Fucking horrendous.
I was gonna say, little better in Japan, but there was still some really... It was somewhere, obviously, somebody had had the dev kit in advance for a while, and others where it's like, why did we release this already?
Yeah, US like PSP RPGs were like Blade Dancer, Lineage of Light, and Valhalla Knight. And US first year DS RPGs are like the shittiest Mario and Luigi game, like Magical Star Sign. What if Magical Vacation was impossible to control?
Well, you didn't like Lost Magic? Remember that one?
Oh, I remember I played Lost Magic. I played, honestly, Magical Star Sign was awesome. Pretty nice, actually. I've played worse controls for a DS.
Well, yeah, but that's also kind of grim.
Yeah. From the Abyss.
Oh, man, that's much later, though. That's like 2008.
Now, that was pretty early. I mean, that was still early on.
Maybe in Japan it was earlier. It, that was in America it was late.
I think that was a 2007 in Japan.
So, 2008 in Japan, and then later 2008 in America, and then early 2009 in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue against Magical Star Sign being called awful. It's just, it has its charms.
I'm being mean. Yeah. But it was, you know,
I can send you some really awful DS control RPGs.
Please do not. I would rather that you did.
I actually liked some of these games, but I had to review them at a lower score
because bad.
The controls were awful. Yeah. I mean, if they ever remake the second Metal Saga game, I'm going to be giving it a much higher score just because it will no longer have the DS controls.
Season of Steel will finally get its due. Yes. But yeah, so some quick other notes on the initial question. Konami made like 5 million attempts at having a fighting game. None of them worked. Almost all of them are kind of embarrassing. The best one might actually be the Super Nintendo TMNT Tournament Fighters. That one's actually pretty good. But the rest are just quite bad. Honestly,
I was going to say, did they make the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Smash clone?
Or
was
no.
that someone else? No, okay.
That was... they lost the TMNT license in the early 2000s. Okay. Smash Up was published by Ubisoft and developed by Game Arts of all companies. Oh. That's why there's a rabbit in it.
Stupid rabbits. I hate them.
I think they're fine. But yeah, Konami attempted to break that a number of times. I think they tried a couple of things that are kind of survival horror games, other than Silent Hill. And there's a reason there's a bunch of Silent Hill games and there's not a bunch of those others. But yeah, it's always interesting. Like certain companies, like even though they're like synonymous with quality in a lot of ways, they'll like there will just be one or two genres that they just cannot crack. Capcom, you know, has some good scrolling shooters in their catalog, the 1940X games, but it's definitely not their forte the way that it was Konami's. Like Konami could do Konami's Gradius, Salamander, Proteus, like all of those are great. Whereas like outside of the 1940X games, Capcom's shooters were mostly undistinguished. Similarly, like traditional RPGs were not Capcom's forte. We will fight and die again, attempting to defeat the Breath of Fire 1 fans.
Breath of Fire 2 was good.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. It's even worse.
Okay.
It's your nostalgia, man.
But yeah, that's always interesting. Or like how a lot of RPG developers, like straight up action games, were just outside their realm of expertise. You get some fascinating stuff there. Capcom also put out a cave shmup called Pro Gear. It was good. Yes, that is true, although they didn't develop it. There's some other ones that they make some interesting ones like super late as far as these kinds of things go. Like or not necessarily make, but they publish. Like they publish Mars Matrix, that's a pretty cool game. In the heyday of making scrolling shooters, Capcom's shooters were often undistinguished compared to, like, say, Konami's. Just interesting. Like, certain developers just can't crack certain genres. Now I'm just thinking about, like, weirdo shit, like how... like in the mid 2000s, Nintendo published Geist, which is, I suppose, technically a first person shooter. Okay. Everyone here remember Geist?
I know of it. I never played it though.
Yeah, it wasn't internally developed. It was developed by a company called Nspace, who prior to that was mostly known for Rugrats licensed games and Duke Nukem, like the Duke Nukems no one played.
Geist, why does this sound familiar?
It was a first-person shooter where you played as a guy who was ripped out of his fucking body and had to... and could, like, possess things, but only if he could find a way to scare them. So you'd do things like, I can possess this dog by possessing its bowl of food and making that bowl of food explode. Don't make the dog frightening game. I'm just going to put that one out there. Don't make a dog frightening game.
Yeah. Don't like that.
But, yeah, just one of those, like, Nintendo's like published a lot of shooters, but like they've never really tried to crack like the pseudo realistic first person shooter market.
What was another game? Yeah. Conduit, wasn't that a Wii game?
The Conduit was a Wii game, although it was not Nintendo published.
Okay.
That was Sega published of all things. That was very much like a company trying to sort of make a PS3 and 360 style game for the Wii. Kind of interesting. Thing where something like that. 1944, the Loop Master was not even made by Capcom. It's made by Rising. That sounds right. That's pretty late in. That's pretty late in that period. Also, I'm just like in love with the name 1944, the Loop Master. That's a completely insane name. It's a sequel to 19XDX, the War Against Destiny. But yeah, the Loop Master was a Rising title.
War Against Destiny's Child, how Beyonce went off on her own. No. I'm kidding.
But yeah, Rising eventually became the company Aiding, which is a pretty prolific contract company that Capcom's worked with a number of times. Aiding's name apparently comes, if Wikipedia is to believe, comes from a phrase that exists in Japanese, nanakorobi yaoki, which apparently is supposed to mean something like fall down 7 times, get up 8 times.
Okay, that makes sense.
But yeah, Rising being a good shooter developer is not surprising if you know that they were a bunch of the people that had left Compile. So... they hand them the development duties for a shooter and you're going to get a good shooter. It's almost impossible for them not to. Rising's other stuff would be things like things that people who know what these are very enamored with, like Battle Garega. But yeah, obviously not so much, not a lot of mainstream appeal to Battle Garega, which is a notoriously insanely hard shooter by insanely hard shooter standards. It has a whole rank system that players who are trying to one credit clear the game strategically get themselves killed at specific times to lower their rank so that the game will not go completely berserk in terms of difficulty.
Wow.
See, isn't it weird that mobile games popular over 10 years ago, like Doodle Jump and Jetpack Joyride, continue to live on as arcade systems? I recently saw a Jetpack Joyride machine at an arcade I haven't visited for years. Yeah, I don't get what's going on with that. I it's not quite old enough to be nostalgic. It hasn't really gone anywhere. I don't get what, but like so many arcade machines that are made nowadays, at least in the U.S.
Crossy Roads.
We have, like Fruit Ninja or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's all like we have taken a phone game and found a way to make you feel more insane for paying for it. Extremely strange. I don't get, like, evidently it must be working. Like there's some wisdom to it, because like the idea of an arcade game is that you need to be able to instantly understand it, and all of these are things that are, for good and ill, instantly understandable. But like, God, couldn't you like at least have more than, like, you know, old arcade games, you could instantly understand them, but there was oftentimes a lot of depth to them. Like, I just started talking about the rank system in Battle Garega. And that sure doesn't exist. Put a rank system in Fruit Ninja for the arcade. Make it so that, like, an impossible number of fruit are flying by. If I'm cutting too many fruit, I need to strategically fail to cut fruit. What was the? Oh, now I'm thinking of like other weird shooters that didn't get home ports, because like Battle Garega, as brought up, as far as I can tell, never got a home port. But now I'm thinking about like weird cave shooters like Dangun Fever on.
I was gonna say Death Smiles has been ported like 50 times now.
Yeah, now go play fucking Dangun Fever on. Do it. It's a fucking shooter about dancing. The bomb is just like a bunch of dancing silhouettes. It's great. That did not have like an English, and like it has like weird disco soundtrack. But yeah, Fever On was like eventually finally given a home port via a PlayStation 4 port for M2's like Shot Triggers series of like home ports of like previously obscure, often arcade only shooters, which I think sadly that entire label is dead now. I don't think there has been a new Shot Triggers in many years. I can check. Maybe I've been just not paying attention. Maybe I've missed some of the Shot Triggers.
I want a revival of Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. God damn it.
That requires the ascent of a comic book license holder. I didn't realize that the Night Striker re-release was officially a Shot Trigger. Okay. So Shot Trigger is still going on. Now get Battle Garega. I know that you wanted M2. You crave it. But yeah, there's some Toplin fucking arcade shooters as well. Okay. I'm getting super, super off topic. Okay. I might need to cut this short soon because my voice is starting to give out.
Okay.
I have had a busy weekend. Okay. Okay. So Farmer says, my sister-in-law's English, she's Japanese BTW, has gotten so much better. We can talk about a lot more things. I only recently learned that she's a lifelong fan of Otome games, and she told me back in the PS2 and PSP days, she learned to never buy Koei Otome games at launch. They usually pack the games and their expansions together in box sets and add in new voice lines and new CGs. It was not as bad if you bought the normal retail release of the original game, but Koei also made elaborate premium editions with CD audio dramas and character merch. Already asked about how people back then might wait for the Game of the Year edition, but I wonder if it applied to Japan too. How many Japanese fans held out on their purchase to wait for an FF International version or a Kingdom Hearts Final Mix?
I mean, back then it was very less assured that such a thing would actually happen.
Yeah, at least with certain companies.
Yeah. I mean, it was much more common to have like a Greatest Hits edition like a year or two later that was much cheaper. But that was mainly... Yeah, but that was mainly to pick up the handful of people who hadn't bought it at the very beginning. It was, I mean, Let's say, for example, experience with Final Fantasy XIII's release. It was very common to see everybody purchase it immediately and then finish it as fast as possible and see how good they could get a resale value in the used game store. Mm-hmm. I just, because I remember Final Fantasy XIII's resale price crashed 3 months after release because so many people had finished it and were selling it back.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of funny to watch. But, you know, that was much more of a paradigm than it was just buy it immediately, finish it up, see how much you can recoup on resale.
Mm-hmm.
The Otome games kind of developed that partly just they know it's a much more niche market, and at some point their developed fan base was rabid enough to actually make this a possible tactic.
A part of me also wonders if, like, especially early into a franchise's lifespan, if it would sometimes be used to sort of test the waters of, like, how much that if something did well, you go back to that well and you update it, and eventually it starts being, and that's how it morphs into a business plan of we make the base version and then we use that money to make the more complete edition and sell that again.
And that still feels like a much more modern evolution of the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, I mean, that's something that works a lot better when you're dealing mostly with downloaded games.
Mm.
But with physical copies, there's such a sink of time and money invested to begin with. Just thinking back, the earliest examples I can think of this were mostly in the visual novel dating sim and also the Atelier series.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing. But very often it was... Very often it wasn't on the same system.
Even worse.
a lot of these games start out like PC Engine, and then the PlayStation version was the expanded version.
Yeah, the Plus version, Forever With You.
Or, like Atelier Marie started out with PlayStation, moved to Sega Saturn with slight improvement, moved to Dreamcast with a lot more improvement, moved back over to PlayStation 2 with the best version.
Mm-hmm.
That was over the course of a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fastest any Atelier game ever got a Plus version was Lily, and that's because they had to...
It was
literally bug fixes. Because the original press of the game was broken.
And that does remind me of an interesting thing that I saw in an interesting YouTube video from a content creator called Punchy, who was doing a video about the Japanese rhythm games that preceded like Guitar Hero. So you had stuff like Guitar Freaks and Drummania. And there's at least one of those Drum Mania games that is just flat out broken. And the only way to tell whether you have one of the revised copies or not is a tiny dot on the spine. Which makes buying a used copy a complete minefield. Do you get the good one or do you get the bad one? Who knows? Not unless you've done your research to know the tiny dot on the spine that tells you that this is the corrected version that's drums set that... Where, yeah. Like, kick drums are not broken.
And then, I mean, many of things like Persona 3 Fess, which was originally released as, I mean, was not the first append disc that I've ever seen, but it was like the first really mainstream one, where you bought an extra to add on to the game that you already had, and then eventually they had to release the game with all the content folded together in a newer version. Yeah, I know I've seen append discs like that before Persona 3 Fest came out, but...
I'm going to pull up Guitar Freaks again, because a lot of those Beimani games like work like that.
Aside from the obvious games that needed... that got regular updates for soundtrack, like the Beatmanias.
Yeah, those things are obnoxious.
I want to say at least one Nippon Ichi game got one, but more as a bug fix. But I can't remember.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, prior to, prior to the PlayStation 3 era, it was quite rare just because it was a major investment in material to do this kind of thing. And a lot of times it was either an expansion, like Final Fantasy XI or Persona 3 Fest, or a major bug fix like Atelier Lily. Otherwise, if it wasn't, otherwise it just wasn't cost effective. So if something fell in between those extremes, then yeah, just whenever you moved on to the next console, you just add in all the new stuff and that's it. Some of Square's updates were a little different. Just because they use the American market to put in all of the fixes and improvements that they had gotten as feedback from the Japanese release. And that's not really normal for that generation. So. Yeah.
Okay. I would love to keep answering questions and shooting the shit, but my throat is giving out. So let's hear where I can read books, which I don't have to read with my mouth.
Buy my book!
I'm trying to imagine how you would be reading some of these things with your mouth and... okay. That's a very interesting combination of scratch and sniff and braille.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like an untapped market.
Yeah, for good reason. Snozzberries taste like snozzberries. Okay, well, so if you are interested in tabletop role-playing games, or if you lack the time to actually play them, then if you're interested in experiencing them vicariously through third parties, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor for Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Most of the way through the final episode 15 writing, need to finish typing up episode 14 as well, get some cover art. The main saga will be ending this year. Hopefully by the 11th anniversary of me starting to write this thing. Yeah. It's been a while. It's been fun. Stuff is currently blowing up in the story. Literally. Very literally. So it's Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. Soon to be 15 episodes, 5 side stories, and a novel-length paralogue, or if you like Dead Tree format, 6 paperbacks. Or a combined word count of somewhere around War and Peace. So, yay. It's a whole lot of adventure. Also, for the lit RPG genre, we have Vainglorious Long as the Night. I don't like doing things normally half the time anyway, so since most of that genre is dominated by World of Warcraft, D&D, or Sword Art Online plot clones, this one's Metroidvania in style, with lots of B-movies referenced. I had a lot of fun writing that one. And then for other Japanese stuff, we have Tanuki is a Teapot, Japanese folk tales all about animals. This is all under the name Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Again, all on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Because like it or not, is usually not, it's really hard to make things work on any other independent publishing model. And then going under the other pen name of Michael Spearwater, we have A Wager for Wanderlust, which is a travelogue romantasy full of all sorts of things I do not wish to have crossed over with a demographic focused on young adult fantasy, which is why we have a different pen name involved. And soon to come, under that same pen name, we have The Sin of Tantalus, which is... cozy dystopia. How about that? I keep trying to come up with different ways of trying to describe this book, but nothing quite fits. Let's just say that I wrote this thing pre-pandemic, and a lot of it is hitting a little close to home now. post-pandemic. Socially. So, anyway, that one is due to release April 19th. For no particular reason, except that that is a day which lives in infamy back home anyway. So, I could have done April 20th, but I decided, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, also more to come. I really wish I had the money to just commission every single cover I need for every single book I have available to possibly publish this year. So, working on that. There's going to be a lot of stuff coming in the future.
Anyway. More to come. Future events like these will affect you in the future.
Yes. Futuristically, yes.
Okay. Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on the RP Gamer Twitch channel on Tuesday and Thursday nights, currently streaming East 10 Proud Nordics, although occasionally I'll do something else just for a night. There was a Super Mario RPG stream for Mario Day. And over this past week, I didn't stream on Tuesday because I decided to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with some Baileys, and I watched Boondock Saints, and that was fun. So, yeah, going to do East 10, Proud Nordics this week. On my Thursday stream, I got to a boss that had way too much freaking health, and I actually had to lower the difficulty, which I was upset about. But I did beat it, and hopefully I won't get frustrated again on future streams, but no promises. So then beyond that, you can follow me on Blue Sky, Instagram, and YouTube under Smokin' Joe Gamer. Those are the platforms that I've been using to promote my brand and whatnot. So I haven't done any new YouTube videos in a while, but I've got like 500 videos on there going back a few years now. And, you know, there's plenty of cool stuff in there. At least I thought so. And maybe one of these days the algorithm will grace me with its bounty. I don't know. So, yeah, consider liking, following, subscribing, etc. And you can also join the RP Gamer Discord server, and I chat on there frequently. But just don't be weird and don't swear too much. And just if the mods tell you to stop, then just stop. If you get into a pissing contest with any of the staff members, you are going to lose. So. Dave, where can we find you?
I'm here.
Okay.
No, I will end the bit. You can ask us questions. You can ask us questions via the RP Gamer Discord, which Joe already told you about, which thankfully dear friend Fireminer has left some in there, and I will one day have the courage to answer them all. There's actually some interesting ones that I'm looking forward to getting to, as well as the ones that give me trepidation. Thank you once again, Fireminer. And you can also ask us questions in the chat when we're streaming, which is typically somewhere in the range of 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, or 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays. You can also, we also have a sister show, Shenanigans, which is more consistently 9 p.m. Pacific on Mondays. AKA midnight, not Mondays, 9 p.m. Pacific on Sundays, midnight Eastern, where some combination of me, Wheels, and Joe played whatever, and if we're lucky, Gaijin or someone else joins us as well. I have no idea what happened last night. I was busy.
It was mostly me watching. Yeah, I was watching Wheels play Marathon and Remnant, and we did one quest in Scott Pilgrim EX.
And I assume there were no survivors.
No, well, we saved Goth Neil, and he turned into Young Neil.
Back.
And we defeated some kind of swashbuckler variant of Envy. And it was cool.
That sounds fun. Okay, I don't know what. Oh god. There's some questions that I'm horrified but ready for. Hopefully, them appearing in the podcast sections. We can remember them because Fireminer had some more to throw at us.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, yeah. So yeah, you can ask us questions. But otherwise, I think you can also ask us questions in the comment section of this very episode. Assuming we also put it up. But otherwise, I think that about wraps it up, and my throat is killing me. So, see you, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you.
To you.
Resident Evil.
Oh, Jesus Christ, fuck off.
You know what?
He just left. Oh my god,
it stinks.
Alright, you're just gonna do them all. Okay, that's great.
That wasn't all of them. We still have...
Nerd!
Oh, what else is
this? Is... What? This is boring.
Okay, now we can all go to bed.
Yes, please.